Green Scene on the Pat Kenny Show with Repack. Does your business use the three bin system? Learn more about your legal recycling obligations at repack.ie.
Donald Trump has claimed that Israel is ready to agree a peace deal with Hamas as he seeks to broker a ceasefire in the war in Gaza that has claimed almost 60,000 lives, most of them innocent Gazans. Trump has said representatives for Qatar and Egypt will deliver this, quote, final proposal to Hamas officials. To discuss this now and more, Emeritus Professor of Peace at Bradford University, Paul Rogers. Morning, Paul.
Morning, Jonathan.
There's a sense of deja vu about this, isn't there?
There is, I'm afraid, and I think this is realistically so. One has to remember that the last time there was a ceasefire and the Israelis broke it and broke it in a very tough way with multiple airstrikes. And I think the problem is that what Trump seems to want is essentially for Hamas, I think, to give up all the hostages in return for some sort of deal. The reality is that Hamas doesn't for one minute trust the Israelis and regards the hostages as almost its only, I have to say it, only card to play. So I think the possibility of getting this pause is going to be really pushing it. It's just possible, that Trump could put enough pressure on Netanyahu when he visits him in Washington at the weekend to get something rather more clear-cut from the Israelis. But nobody's really expecting it. I don't know of anybody who works in this field and has been following it closely with background knowledge who believes that Israel is ready for an end to this war. Essentially, that is not where Netanyahu and the ultra-nationalists who support him is coming from. So it would be very good to see if there was even a temporary pause. But beyond that, I don't think we're in a position to expect a complete ceasefire and an end to the war with Israeli withdrawal from the Gaza Strip.
Tony in Monaghan, one of our listeners, Paul, says the only reason Israel would agree to a 60-day ceasefire is because they need to rest their troops, resupply and repair systems, which is exactly what they did during the last ceasefire. There must be a point at which the IDF becomes fatigued with all of the activity that they engaged in between the aerial assault on Iran, which, you know, would have taken up a lot of resource, the ongoing ground assault in Gaza and constant activity on the West Bank.
I think you're absolutely right there. And Tony's sort of hit the nail on the head. The Israelis are finding it pretty tough to carry this on because it's fairly clear what Netanyahu wants to do. He wants essentially long-term control of Gaza, coupled with really what one has to call the ethnic cleansing of the great majority of the Palestinians who live there, 2 million people or so. He also wants to be able to use air power whenever it's required in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq and elsewhere to maintain security against any kind of what you might call threat, which can include groups like Hezbollah or others that can be said to threaten Israel. He certainly wants to maintain air control over Iran and wants an end to the Iranian military facilities that threaten Israel in any way, most notably the nuclear ones. So overall, what Netanyahu wants is a long-term war. And this is where, in fact, it's proving actually very difficult. One has to remember, as far as the ground troops are concerned, Israel is still taking losses in Gaza. And it is, after all, primarily a reserve army. The great majority of people in the army are not full-time. And so it's a kind of citizens' involvement, which has an involvement right across the economy and against the social aspects of the country. So, yes, it's one in which the assumption is that Israel is overwhelmingly powerful and can do more or less anything. Well, it can, but there are also very big limitations in terms of what it can maintain or what level it can maintain this war.
Is there any red line left when it comes to Israeli military activity? We saw the 12-day war, which involved direct attacks on Iran. And even in the last week, we have had the IDF, Israeli media saying the IDF ordered soldiers to open fire on unarmed civilians. We saw the deaths of 74 people in Gaza on Monday with airstrikes on a seaside cafe, more Palestinians shot trying to get food. You know, the very obvious attempt to force all Gazans from the north of the Gaza Strip towards those food distribution sites. Is there anything left that Israel can do that will shock people in a way that might cause a reaction in the West?
Well, so far it hasn't happened. And the point is, I mean, what you are just going through is an indication of what is actually happening on the ground. And, you know, I think anybody would have to accept that this is appalling, that what Israel is doing is hugely damaging to itself, massively damaging to Palestinians, obviously, but it probably is not making Israel a jot more secure itself, because obviously what it is doing is stirring up for the long term, and I mean multiple generations, a real anger towards Israel in terms of what it has done. And the idea that, you know, you're going to actually sort of crush a revolt in this way, well, it certainly is not going to work here. And moreover, I mean, Israel is now being treated more and more as a pariah state across much of the world in a way that it simply wasn't just a year or two ago. But the Israelis, from their current perspective, well, the government, of course, is absolutely determined to take a very hard line. But ordinary Israelis just want an end to the war, and exactly how it's ended, I think they're less concerned with. So they would wear the government taking very strong action. The other thing you pointed to was the West Bank, where essentially Israel is determined eventually to annex it, just to incorporate it completely into Israel. They stated that this is their plan, but also I think to make life so difficult within the occupied territories that more and more Palestinians will decide they've got to get out and move with all the costs, personal and economic and the rest that takes, into Jordan and beyond. So essentially we're in a position where the Israelis feel under the current government, with its ultra-national support, that they can do more or less what they want. And the only person, I think, likely to change that would be Donald Trump. And we do not see much sign of that at the moment.
There is, of course, the domestic matter that Benjamin Netanyahu is facing, which is that long-running corruption trial. The Israelis in any war, your domestic audience will be fed exactly what they need to be fed by government. Let's face it, they're getting a lot of propaganda, not hearing a lot of what we hear of in the West. But the one thing they will have talked about this week is the cancellation of the hearings into that corruption trial. How much of what we see is a reflection of Netanyahu kind of trying to keep himself front and centre of a war when ultimately his political career is on the line?
Well, he seems to be determined to do it this way. And one has to remember that Netanyahu is an extremely skilled politician who knows what he can and can't do within the Israeli political environment. Yes, he was in serious trouble a couple of years ago. Many Israelis have disliked intensely what he's been doing because there have been attempts to really corral more and more power into the hands of the executive and away from the Knesset, and that has been deeply unpopular. But Netanyahu does have this capacity to survive and even thrive in these circumstances. And for him, I think a war situation is the circumstance which best enables him to thrive, which is one reason alone why I think he does not want to see the end of this war anytime soon.
It's interesting that Qatar were invited to mediate on this as well, given, I suppose, the fact they were caught up in the 12-day war between Israel and Iran, and indeed arguably the United States. Are they still seen as honest brokers here along with Egypt?
Insofar as anybody's an honest broker, yes, Qatar probably more so, in fact, than Egypt. Qatar has played this role, but it's had a role like this for a long time. It had the Al Udeid air base, one of the world's largest air bases, certainly I think must be the largest in the Middle East, right in the middle of Qatar. That, of course, is the big American base. But it has also housed offices for Hamas and others, and going right back to the Taliban as well. It's a very wealthy little country with huge supplies of gas. And as a consequence, it's, in a sense, its own master. And it feels it can play this role. And on some occasions, it's been a very valuable role. I think many countries have valued its existence.
Okay, Professor Paul Rogers, Emeritus Professor of Peace at Bradford University. Thank you very much for joining us.
Green Scene on the Pat Kenny Show with Repack. Does your business use the 3-bin system? Learn more about your legal recycling obligations at repack.ie.